I'm worried about this pronunciation. Pukahangatas? Is that right, Tay? Is that how you say
kind
it?
Kind of.
How do you say it?
Pocahontas.
There we go. It's the debut collection by Victoria University Institute of Modern Letters graduate and Adam Foundation Prize winner, Tay Tibble, who now joins me in the studio. Kia ora, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Good. How are you, Megan?
Good. I want to describe the book as it is on the back of the book by Hini Moana Baker. The collection speaks about beauty, activism, power, popular culture with compelling guile, a darkness, a deep understanding and sensuality. Is that what it feels like to you?
Yes, that's really nice, though. That's
Is that what you were aiming for?
That's better than what I was aiming for. That was some really nice quote from Hini Moana.
Excellent. That is good to aim for. So I am not a poetry reader. I find poetry quite intimidating and difficult to understand. But I loved this book. It's poetry not as we know it, or not as I know it anyway. Does that speak to you?
That's nice. That's cool. I'm happy.
You're happy?
Yeah.
How long did it take you to write this?
Well, I wrote it during my MA year, which is like a course of 9 months. So, yeah, most of the poems were written in those 9 months. So,
what's the one that's not?
It's called Watching the Boys Play Rugby. I wrote that earlier this year.
Such a great title. Okay, so we talked to Tammy Nielsen earlier in the show, and one thing we talked about is that her album feels a lot like a discussion of what it is to be a woman in 2018. And so does this, but in a different way. It's what it's like to be a young Māori woman specifically, but also, I guess, your mother. But it's so personal. This all feels very personal to you. Is it personal, or am I just projecting?
Yeah, there are a lot of personal stories, I guess, and anecdotes throughout the collection. But I guess, including for the most part, was like pretty subconscious. And I think that, me personally, I've always been very like filled and attuned to like the stories of my mother and my grandparents, and also like quite aware of my own experiences. So writing the book, they kind of just surfaced. But once I allowed myself to like go there, because I was worried about writing like quite personal things, but once I allowed myself to kind of go there, I found it very generative and produced like a lot of work that I really liked. But like on the other hand, actually, I didn't feel as vulnerable as I thought I would writing these kind of stories, and I think that's because of like, I guess, the kind of experiences that I have to, that I feel like I have to honour, or like my whakapapa, and like even though I guess these stories are really specific to my family and my experiences, they probably aren't that unique. And I'm sure there's many like other like Māori women and families who have had similar experiences. So while they're personal, I kind of feel like I was like creating and writing towards something that was a bit bigger than myself. So that's kind of like, I feel like it's like a layer of protection.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we talked about that in that previous interview with Lauren Mabry from Churches, that when it feels very vulnerable to open yourself up to that, but actually if you're doing it for, I guess, a greater good, for want of a better phrase, yeah, or to tell a universal story, those personal stories are almost always universal, and really that's why we tell stories.
Yeah, and one thing I learned during the MA, we had a masterclass with this other poet, Andrew Johnson, and he said something that really got to me. It was like, the weirder and more specific and personal you go, like it kind of has a reverse effect, and it ends up being the most transcendent
to other people. Yeah, yeah. There's a line in one of the poems where you, I assume, meet your boyfriend's dad, and I'm not going to out you, your poor boyfriend's dad, but that you take him to a bar that's filled with, I think, leftover Halloween decorations, I think is the line, and the father-in-law, for want of a better phrase, says, "You seem like a details girl," and you do seem like a details girl. These poems are filled with pop culture references and biblical references, and there's all those sorts of things that are the little details of a life. Is that true? Like, do you agree?
Yeah, I think I'm a details girl. I'm pretty observant, I think. I'd like to think, anyhow. And I draw from all sorts. I read somewhere that like a poet should go through the world like with a net, trying to catch like anything and everything to use if they can. Yeah, are we talking about the biblical and pop culture references?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I guess in terms of those, again, they're probably like relatively subconscious, but I do recognise there are a lot of them in there.
Do you read a lot? Are you widely read? Is that where the references come from? Or is it just the world around you?
A bit of both, yeah. I guess I'm widely read-ish. I'm probably not as widely read as I'd like at this point, but
how old are you? You are quite young still.
I'm 22, yeah.
Yeah, so you've got what? You've got time to
read. I think I'm widely read for a 22-year-old, maybe, yeah.
All right, you're going to read a poem for us. We should warn listeners that this contains an adult word. But a word that has been used in political context in the last couple of years, so it's probably okay. Tell us a little bit about this poem before you read it.
So this poem, it's one of the first poems in the collection, and it kind of talks to, I guess, it's called In the 1960s, An Influx of Māori Women, and it's about women coming to Wellington and urbanisation that occurred around that time, post-World War II.
Okay, off you go.
In the 1960s, an influx of Māori women moved to Tinakori Road in their printed mini-dresses, grow flowers on white stone rooftops to put in their honeycomb vases, dust the pussy-shaped ashtray their husbands bought on vacation in Sydney, walk to Kokoldi and Staines while their husbands are at work, spend their monthly allowance on a mint-green margarita mixer, buy makeup at Elizabeth Arden in the shade too pale pink, buy vodka and dirty magazines on the way home from the chemist, hide the vodka and dirty magazines in the spare refrigerator in the basement, telephone their favourite sister in Gisborne, go out to dinner with their husbands and dance with his friends, smile at the wives who refuse to kiss their ghost pink cheeks, order desserts like pecan pie but never eat it, eat two pieces of white bread in the kitchen with the light off, slip into an apricot nylon nightgown freshly ordered off the catalogue, keep quiet with their husbands' blue-veined arms coarsening their waists, remember the appointment they made to get their hair fixed on Lambton Quay, think about drowning themselves in the bathtub instead, resurface with clean skin, then rinse and repeat.
It's grim. Is it meant to be grim? Does it feel grim to you?
I'm a bit morbid. It doesn't seem that grim to me, no.
That's a hard read to listen to someone read out loud, especially, but to read yourself, the ending of that is difficult. It's, yeah, the idea of all of those women in the 1960s feeling like that, because we know so many women in the 1960s felt like that. Are you basing that on someone? Or just all of those women?
I guess all of those women, yeah. I mean, that one's pretty made up. But,
yeah.
I mean, my great-grandmother did move here.
Yeah, to Wellington.
In the 50s and 60s from up the East Coast, so...
The your mother and grandmother, actually, no, I'll go back to a line. There's a line in that one that comes out a couple of times, spend their monthly allowance on a mint green margarita mixer. The colour mint green comes up a couple of times in the book. Is that intentional or completely random? Comes up in it, there's a ring in one of the other poems.
Yeah, it hasn't got much significance to me, but I did try and keep like a certain colour palette throughout the book for purely aesthetic, my own personal reasons.
It makes sense. Like when I think about the book, because the cover is this beautiful pink and green and orange cover with the woman on it, and that colour palette does appear throughout the whole book. It is a theme of the book. How do you keep that in mind, I guess, when you're writing? Did you have like around your desk? Did you have colours?
No, anything like that. No, I'm not sure, sorry.
That's okay, that's completely all right.
Yeah, I think I just gravitated towards certain colours.
Yeah, because there's a lot of, I guess, harking back to the 60s and that kind of what I'm imagining is sort of plastic KitchenAid mixer type aesthetic that you see a lot.
Yeah,
even for the ones set now.
Yeah, I definitely have a preference for like things that are like kitsch or kind of tacky. That's like, yeah, I guess that's just where my personal taste lies. Yeah. And like,
Your mother looms quite heavily in the book. Not looms sounds terrible, but it doesn't mean in a bad way. But she's very there, and your grandmother as well. Both are very present in the book. Do you think?
Yeah, they are. They are a major presence in the book. And the book's dedicated to my mum too.
Oh, I hadn't noticed that.
Yeah.
Why was it dedicated to your mum?
I just got a really close relationship with my mum. I wasn't raised by my father, so my mum kind of became my whole world, essentially. And I think that's quite present and apparent in the book.
And she's been such a big influence on your life.
Yeah, she's been a really big influence. And I think one of the interesting things I was thinking about while writing this book, and what I was discovering while writing this book, was how similar we actually really are, and how similar our experiences have been, both being Māori and Pākehā, growing up predominantly in a Pākehā area, being raised without a father, and because my great grandmother is one of the people that feature in this book, and having the same relationship with her, because that was my great grandmother, but that's her grandmother, and kind of having that same similar relationship that we had with her.
Mm-hmm.
And also us being both firstborn females, and kind of me feeling like there's a certain mana wahine to that. And once I started writing about her and writing about our nana and our family, it was just really generative. And it, produced a lot of work that I really liked.
We should talk about the title of the book. Say it again for me.
Pokahanata.
Which is a made-up word.
Yeah, it's a transliteration or a hybridised word to phonetically mimic Pocahontas.
And it has no translation, though it does mean something.
Yeah, so Po means pillar, essentially, and Kaha is strength, so pillar is strength.
Yeah. And why Pocahontas?
Well, it takes its name from the first poem in the book, which is an essay or a lyric essay about Indigenous hair, do's and don'ts. And I just really love that piece. It's probably my favourite piece in the collection, and it's the one I wrote really early on, and it kind of just changed the way allowed me to write about the things that I actually wanted to write about. So I just felt like that piece really summed up a lot of the themes that I was interested in.
That essay is amazing. As a woman who doesn't have Indigenous hair, it is challenging to read and to be reminded of the cultural context that all of this is happening in. That Indigenous hair is such a politically charged thing.
Yeah,
it's an amazing collection. Thank you so much for coming in today. Say the name for us again.
Pocahontas.
There we go. Struggle with that pronunciation. Thank you so much. That is poet Tay Tibble.